So pick up an Old Testament survey again. We're in Lecture 13, Study Pack 7A. This morning we're going to be looking at the Southern Kingdom. Of course, remember we have the Southern Kingdom and the Northern Kingdom. In this study pack, I do want you to memorize Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 11 through 13. I think it's in the study pack, but if it's not, I just want to make sure. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 11 through 13. Of the 12 tribes of Israel, there were only two tribes that remained loyal to the Davidic dynasty, and those were the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. The Davidic dynasty continued to rule after the death of Solomon in Jerusalem. God had promised David that he would have a son to sit upon his throne. In contrast, we find, of course, that in Israel we had many different ruling families. If you remember back to the last lecture in which we looked at the Northern Kingdom, David's descendants, with one exception, retained the continuous royal leadership of David's capital city. The Southern Kingdom, which was known as Judah, existed from 931 to 586 B.C. The captivity actually took place in 605 B.C., but 586 B.C. is the destruction of Jerusalem. During this time, you have 20 different kings that ruled. 12 of them were contemporaries with the Northern Kingdom, Israel. The rest, of course, ruled after the time of Israel. Because it's impossible to focus on all of the kings, our major focus is going to be on four kings of Judah who were outstanding leaders. The following list of kings gives the approximate dates for each of the kings. We find King Jehoshaphat, who ruled in approximately 850 B.C., King Uzziah, which ruled from approximately 750 B.C., Hezekiah, who ruled approximately 700 B.C., and King Josiah, who ruled approximately 630 B.C. The account of the Southern Kingdom that's found in 1 and 2 Kings deals primarily with the relationships of Judah and Israel. God gives us supplementary information about Judah in 2 Chronicles. That'll work a lot better. Took a long time before 2 Corinthians was written. 2 Chronicles primarily covers the history of the Davidic dynasty. We're going to begin looking at Jehoshaphat's era. And when I look at that era, I'm looking at the kings that were surrounding this king as well. As we look at Jehoshaphat's era in 931 B.C., we find that Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, faced rebellion and the split of the kingdom of his father. Throughout the Middle East, we have other leaders that were developing. Jeroboam developed into the leader of the 10 northern tribes and was their king. Rezin in Damascus, the Syrians had gathered a tremendous amount of strength and were going forward with building their kingdom. Hadad in Edom also was championing the cause of his own people against Solomon's son and against his successor. Solomon, of course, had a tremendous expansion of the kingdom, and we find that there were people that were rebelling against that expansion as well. Scripture points to two specific reasons why there was a split in the kingdom. First of all, God had promised Solomon that his apostasy and idolatry were going to be the cause for his divine judgment on Solomon. This judgment did not take place until the death of Solomon, and that was for the sake of David, his father. The heavy burden of taxes was used by Jeroboam as kind of a wedge issue to Jeroboam and the northern tribes to lead a rebellion against Rehoboam. We know that ultimately the real reason behind the split of the kingdom is that God said the kingdom was going to split because of Solomon's apostasy. But to the people used the taxes as their wedge issue. And of course you find that even today, taxes are a political issue. Headlines in the Chicago Tribune today talked about it, how the Democrats are going to approve the spending for the war if they can get a cut on taxes. And so taxes are still an issue that we find used in politics today. When Jeroboam decided to suppress the rebellion, the prophet Shemaiah advised him not to fight against the seceding tribes, the 10 northern tribes, because the dividing of the nation was from God. During his reign, during the reign of Rehoboam, we find that Shishak, S-H-I-S-H-A-K, the ruler of Egypt, also invaded Judah, raiding Jerusalem and taking some of the temple treasures. And so we find that the downhill slide for the southern kingdom happened rather quickly. Rehoboam had reigned for 17 years. His son Abijam reigned for 3 years after that. And their reigns were characterized by apostasy and idolatry. Even though formal worship in the temple was maintained, we find that that was the general trend in the kingdom. Abijam's son Asa, on the other hand, reigned for 41 years and prepared the way for revival under his son Jehoshaphat. When you look at Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat is one of the names that you're going to always remember as one of the righteous kings of the nation of Judah. Asa, while he was king, encouraged Judah to keep the law of God. He removed the idols at the urging of the prophet Azariah. He burnt the image of Asherah, which was the goddess, the Canaanite goddess of fertility. He removed Maacah, M-A-A-C-A-H, the queen mother, from her position as queen mother, because of her idolatry as well. During this time of Asa's reign, Asa experienced God's help in repelling the Ethiopians who had invaded the kingdom from the south. Because the revival of the religious feasts in Jerusalem was drawing people down from the 10 northern tribes, we find that Baasha, who was Jeroboam's son, the second king of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, began to fortify the city of Ramah. Now, Ramah was only 5 miles north of Jerusalem. To the Jewish people, to the southern kingdom, Judah, this would have been a military threat. And so because he feared this military threat, we find that Asa sent a bribe to Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. He came from the north then, and of course, and invaded Israel from the north. As a result, Baasha had to pull his troops out of Ramah, go back up north to be able to fight the Syrians. The prophet Hanani severely rebuked Asa for trusting a heathen king for his help instead of trusting God for his help. Instead of responding to the rebuke, we find that Asa got his feathers up. He went ahead and imprisoned Hanani instead. 2 years before his death, we find that God struck Asa with a fatal disease. Because of his father's preparation, we find that Jeroboam, when he was 35, or Jehoshaphat became king when he was 35 years old, he had a well-organized program that was actually set up to send princes, priests, and the Levites throughout the land to teach God's people God's law. His 25-year reign was a period of revival. It was a period of peace for Judah. Both the Philistines and the Arabs brought tribute to Jehoshaphat, enabling him to build fortresses and store cities throughout the land. Now, if you remember, the Philistines were to the west of the Israelites, and to the east of the Israelites, you have the Arabs. And so Jehoshaphat had a strong, strong army, a strong land, and the city was prospering, and Judah was prospering during this time. Now, Jehoshaphat demonstrated his faith by proclaiming a fast throughout all the cities of Judah when he was threatened by an invasion by the Moabites and the Edomites. He went to the temple and he prayed. In 2 Chronicles 20, verse 12, we read, O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. God gave Judah and God gave King Jehoshaphat an assurance that they would see a great victory without fighting. You know, that's the best kind of victory. When you can have a victory like that, you're being invaded and you're going to have a victory without fighting. When Judah's army marched toward the invaders became confused, and we find that the invaders fought against each other. The Moabites and the Edomites fought against each other instead of fighting against Judah. As a result, Judah returned triumphant after 3 days of collecting the spoil of their enemies. Jehoshaphat did have one real weak point in his reign. The problem that Jehoshaphat had is that Jehoshaphat had built an alliance with Ahab, the wicked king of Israel. You know, when I say Ahab's name, it pops into your mind right away that he was a wicked king. There's no question about it. Well, his problem also is that those alliances that were traditionally sealed with marriages. And so we find that the marriage of his son Jehoram with Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, took place to be able to seal this alliance. We're going to see later that Judah reaped terrible, terrible consequences as a result of this alliance, with Athaliah demonstrating her wickedness and demonstrating that she certainly was the daughter of her parents. This alliance protected the northern border of the nation of Judah. But God used the prophets to rebuke Jehoshaphat for this alliance. We're going to find that this is not the only time that Jehoshaphat was rebuked for his alliance with Ahab, the king of Israel. We find, of course, that Jehoshaphat was involved with the very last battle in which Ahab lost his life. It was a battle against the king of Syria. And the Syrians had come to do battle, and Ahab's prophets came. He had 400 prophets of Baal. They all came, and they said, go, and you're going to be able to prosper, and you're going to win this battle. And Jehoshaphat said to King Ahab, is there a prophet of the Lord? Ahab said, well, yeah, there's one. There's this guy named Micaiah, but I don't like what he says. He always says bad stuff about me. And so we find that Jehoshaphat insisted that Micaiah come. Micaiah said, oh, go and you're going to prosper. And he said it real flippantly. And Ahab said, look, tell me the truth. He said, we are going to be killed. And Ahab says, we're going to show him. So Ahab dressed as a common soldier. And Jehoshaphat go out to lead the armies instead. And it's just very unique because you see God's hand in it. The Syrians were chasing Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat cried out. They recognized that he wasn't the king of Israel. They stopped pursuing Jehoshaphat. And the Bible talks about it that peradventure a guy drew a bow and just shot an arrow at random and entered into the joints in Ahab's armor and killed him. Peradventure. You know, Pastor Scudder's been talking about on Sundays that God is the overruler. And God certainly overruled. People can have their little schemes and think that they're going to play games with God. Ahab had his scheme, but Ahab couldn't play any little games with God because God really knew what was going on. And yet this was a very much of a weak spot. Jehoshaphat barely escaped with his own life from that battle. And later, when he returned to Jerusalem, there was a prophet named Jehu who confronted Jehoshaphat. In 2 Chronicles 19, verse 2, we read, and Jehu, the son of Hanani the seer, went out to meet him and said to the king Jehoshaphat, shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? I think this is something that we really need to understand for our own lives as well, this passage in 2 Chronicles chapter 19, verse 2. Should we help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from the Lord. Nevertheless, there are good things found in thee, and that thou hast taken away the groves out of the land and hast prepared thine heart to seek God. After Ahab's death, Jehoshaphat continued on with his unholy alliance with Ahaziah, the son of Ahab. Together they launched a joint shipping venture at Ezion-Geber. The prophet Eliezer predicted that the shipping venture was going to be destroyed, that their ships were going to be wrecked. In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 35 to 37, we read, and after this did Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, join himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who did very wickedly. And he joined himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish, and they made the ships at Ezion-Geber. Then Eliezer, the son of Dodavah of Maresha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, because thou hast joined thyself with Ahaziah, the Lord hath broken thy works. And the ships were broken, that they were not able to go to Tarshish. Later we find that Jehoshaphat again joined with other kings. He joined with the kings of Israel and the king of Edom, to fight against the Moabites. They were threatened with disaster. There was no water. So they called for the prophet Elisha. The prophet Elisha came and he rebuked the kings and he said if it wasn't for Jehoshaphat, he wouldn't even look to God to give him an answer. We find that, of course, God spared the kings. God gave them the water that they needed. They gave them a great victory. But Jehoshaphat was once again rebuked for his alliances with the ungodly. After Jehoshaphat's death, his son Jehoram became king. Jehoram not only executed his six brothers, but also carried on the sins of Ahab and Jezebel in Judah. Remember, of course, that Jehoram was the son who married Athaliah. He reaped what he sowed. The prophet Elisha prophesied that Jehoram would die of an incurable disease. Following Jehoram's reign, we find that Ahaziah, his son, reigned less than a year. And, of course, Ahaziah was making also kept up with the alliance with Israel. And he came over to Israel to visit Israel. It was the time that Jehu came and killed off the line of Ahab. And Ahaziah, the king of Judah, was there, and Ahaziah was one of those who was killed by Jehu, who exterminated the family of Ahab and Jezebel. At his death, Ahaziah's mother, Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, seized the throne, and she began a six-year reign of terror. She began her reign by executing the royal family. Providentially, there was a son named Joash who was saved. The Davidic dynasty was restored after her execution. But that 6 years, which resulted from Jehoshaphat's compromise of the truth, was the only time in Judah's history in which it was not ruled by a descendant of David. We go on now to look at Uzziah's era. Uzziah was also known as Azariah. During the early years of his 39-year reign, which began when he was 7 years old, Joash was guided by Jehoiada. Jehoiada was the priest who was responsible for saving his life. Jehoiada was the priest who actually made it so that he was crowned as king when he was 7 years old. The temple worship had suffered under the previous kings, but now, at least until the death of Jehoiada, the temple worship was continued once again. When Jehoiada died, the apostasy that took place under Joash became so severe that Zechariah, Jehoiada's son, spoke up against it and was stoned in the very courtyard of the temple. We find reference to that in the New Testament as well, when Zechariah was stoned in the temple. God sent judgment to Joash and to the nation of Judah through the oppression of the king of the Syrians, Hazael. Hazael had been anointed by Elisha as the king of Damascus, or the king of the Syrians. When the Syrian armies went ahead and conquered Gath, Joash sent them the Gath, of course, which was of the Philistines, was by the seashore, by the Mediterranean there. Joash sent them the temple treasures to help to avoid an invasion. He was going to buy them off. Later, the Syrian armies invaded Jerusalem, and it was probably because he failed to pay his tribute. The Syrians then spoiled Jerusalem, killed some of the princes, and wounded Joash. Joash, who was wounded, was in his palace, and his servants, two of his servants came. His servants came and actually killed him. And so judgment came upon the king. Judgment came upon the king, who not only permitted apostasy to run his nation, to overrun his nation, but also allowed the shedding of innocent blood. Joash had a son. His son Amaziah reigned for 29 years. He actually didn't rule that long because his son Uzziah became his co-regent after 5 years. After the death of Hazael, the Syrian oppression ceased. Judah was able to regain enough military strength to recover control of Edom. And once again, Edom started paying them tribute. Amaziah, who was proud of his military strength, challenged Israel to a battle. In the battle between Israel and Judah, Jerusalem was plundered. Part of the wall of the city was destroyed. And Amaziah was among the hostages that was carried away captive. Now, those hostages were all released because the king of Israel had a warning from God that he should release them and not keep them captive. But this is one of the lowest points that you're going to find in the southern kingdom's history. The peace that had existed between Israel and Judah for over 100 years had actually been broken, and there was shedding of blood between the two right now. In 791, Uzziah became the co-regent. He guided the southern kingdom until his father's assassination in 767. Uzziah's policies restored the kingdom. And he rebuilt with the rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls, with the termination of Judah's subjection to Israel. And so we find that he had solid policies, the kingdom was growing, the kingdom was expanding. Uzziah was also known as Azariah. He reestablished the peace between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. He had a military program, a military expansion program, and his military expansion program reestablished Judah's military might. It brought economic expansion. It gave Judah control over the Philistines, the Edomites, and the Ammonites. Even today, you find that when there's military expansion, there's growth in the economy. Why? Because the military, the government is buying things. The government is spending to make things happen. Uzziah also established wells for the large herds in the desert areas. He built towers to protect the vine dressers. Copper and iron mining industries were revived in the Sinai Peninsula. And we find that the only time that there was greater economic growth in Judah and Israel, Judah's history, was during the times of Solomon and David. Judah's economic revival and Uzziah's 51-year reign were directly related to his dependence upon God. The Bible tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 5, "And he sought God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding in the visions of God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper." I want you to notice that. As long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. "And God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians that dwelt in Gerbal and the Mehunims." At the height of Uzziah's success as king, his success went to his head. God had given very specific instructions for the temple, that the priests were the ones to be going into the temple and burning the altar of the incense on the altar of incense. But Uzziah went in himself and burnt the incense on the altar of incense. In 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 26, verse 16, we read, "But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction." We always need to be careful. You know, when you have a success, it's easy to go to your head. It's a lot easier to take your eyes off the Lord when you're successful than when you're struggling. And you always need to remember that. "For he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense." When the priests confronted him about his disobedience, he defied them. They told him, "Don't go in." He went in anyway. As a result, Uzziah became a leper. He was ostracized from the palace. He was ostracized from the temple for the rest of his reign. Several years ago when I was in India, I visited the leper colonies. And when you visited the leper colonies, you saw the people whose fingers had fallen off, toes had fallen off, parts of their feet had disintegrated. Some of them had leprosy on their face. Their faces were disintegrating. And leprosy was a contagious disease. Leprosy was a disease that no one wanted. And so people were ostracized. Under the law, the people had to go outside the camp. You know, back even in the days of Israel, we find that there were lepers standing there when there was this the Syrians, I think it was, had surrounded, it must have been the Assyrians, had surrounded Samaria for a long period of time. There was a great famine in the land, and there were four lepers that were outside of the city. They were outside the city because that was what the instructions of the law were. Now Uzziah, who had been one of the greatest kings of Israel for many years, all of a sudden is a leper. The man who went from sitting on the throne went to be the man who sat outside the gates of the city and had to be ostracized and kept from everyone else. Uzziah's son Jotham was made co-ruler in 750 B.C. His father lived for 10 more years and died in 740 B.C. The book of James tells us this: "He giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God, that he may exalt you in due time." Nope, I got that confused with another verse. "Resist the devil, and he'll flee from you." But what happened with Uzziah? Uzziah didn't resist the devil. Uzziah just went ahead and said, "This is what I want to do. I am the king. I am powerful. I can do this." And so he went ahead and did it. When Jeroboam II died in 753, Jeroboam II, of course, was king of Israel. The kingdom of Judah emerged as the most powerful nation in Cana. If you remember back to the last series of lectures that we had where we talked about the nation of Israel, the time of Jeroboam II was one of the most prosperous times for the nation of Israel. They were one of the most powerful nations that were in existence at the time. And so when Jeroboam II died, Judah now took on that position, and Judah became one of the most powerful nations. As the power of Tilgath-Pileser III of Assyria grew, we read that Azariah, or Uzziah, the king of Judah, is mentioned as leading the opposition. Now, The Israelites paid tribute to the Assyrian king, but we find that Judah did not pay tribute and led the opposition. At the death of Uzziah, the threat of the Assyrians clouded the future of Judah. The year of Uzziah's death was also the year in which Isaiah was called to prophesy in Jerusalem. Jotham, Uzziah's son, continued the anti-Assyrian policy. But in 735 BC, there was a pro-Assyrian faction of the nation of Judah who elevated Jotham's son Ahaz to the throne. You know, we look back at these kinds of things and we say, well, you know, God gave David his sons and his son's sons to be able to rule upon the throne. And we don't stop and look at the political things that were going on. There is a lot of politics that's going on over here. Because you have the Assyrian faction and the anti-Assyrian faction. Now you have the pro-Assyrian faction. And the pro-Assyrian faction has now gained the ascendancy to put their own king on the throne instead of the man who is existing as king. And yet God's hand is in all of this because Ahaziah was the father of Hezekiah. And Ahaziah was put upon the throne. And so now we look at Hezekiah's era. Hezekiah was known as a reformer. Hezekiah was a man who led God's children back to him. Because of the righteousness of Hezekiah, the judgments of God against Jerusalem, which had been announced by the prophets, were postponed. They were not carried out with the immediacy that they would have been carried out otherwise. Well, when Hezekiah's father Ahaz was placed on the throne by the pro-Assyrian faction, Pekah, the king of Israel and Rezin, king of Syria, formed an anti-Assyrian alliance. So now we have the pro-Assyrian faction down in Judah and the anti-Assyrians with the combination of the Syrians and the Israelites north of them, directly north. And it caused some extra problems for Israel or for Judah. To keep from being attacked by the south, these two nations waged war against Judah. And they took thousands of people captive, later releasing them. They didn't want the pressure of the Assyrians from the north and the pressure of Judah from the south. It was much easier to go ahead and eliminate the weaker of the two enemies. And so that was the plan in doing this. Obed the prophet released the prisoners of war after being warned, or Obed the king, rather, released the prisoners after they had been warned to let them go. During this time, Isaiah was sent by God. And Isaiah ministered there during that time of Ahaz. And he was sent to Ahaz to assure Ahaz that those two kings from the north, Pekah the king of Israel and Rezin the king of Syria, were both going to lose their thrones. And that he should trust in God to take care of him, to take care of the nation, to take care of his people and their defenses. Instead, we find that Ahaz defied Isaiah. He rejected the advice of Isaiah. He appealed to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, to make an alliance with him. Now, this ended up bringing about the end of the kingdom of Syria, and Israel, of course, was made to pay tribute to the Assyrians. Ahaz pledged his loyalty and he participated with the Assyrian king in all of his pagan rites in Damascus. If you've ever been overseas and ever been in a place where they have the pagan gods, it'll make you sick to think of what these people did instead of worshiping the true God. After he returned from Damascus, Ahaz continued on in his pagan practices. Ahaz took the measurements of the altar that was found in the temple at Damascus of the pagan gods. He had an identical one made for the temple in Jerusalem. Ahaz took the lead in following the pagan religions. He even offered his son, according to the heathen customs of offering their children upon the altar in the fire. He took his temple treasures and used them to pay the demands that the Assyrian king had that Judah pay tribute. The nation remained intact, but God's wrath was upon Judah for its failure to follow after him. Isaiah's predictions that Assyria would be like a razor in God's hand against Judah and like a river were later fulfilled in subsequent times. When Hezekiah began his reign in 716 B.C. You need to remember this was just 6 years after the nation of Israel had been carried off into captivity by the Assyrians. He began to reverse the policies that his father had put in place. He realized that Samaria had been carried away captive because of its idolatry. He understood that there were consequences. He understood that there were laws of reaping and sowing. And so Hezekiah began an effective reform, bringing Judah back to the God of Israel. He had the Levites repair and clean the temple. He removed the idols from the temple. He sanctified and cleansed the vessels of the temple. He had the sacrifices instituted once again, along with the singing of the Levites at the worship in the temple. He not only tried to reestablish true religion back in Judah again, but he reached out to those that were left of the those that were taken captive, those that remained in the land of Israel. He reached out to them and invited them to come and join them and participate in the observance of the Passover in Jerusalem. So the scriptures tell us that there was no such time of rejoicing in Jerusalem since the dedication of the temple. And so it was a great, great time. Hezekiah made the nation turn the corner. Now again, politically, Hezekiah was aligned with Sargon II, who was the king of Assyria. His father had already committed the nation of Judah to be a vassal of Assyria. And of course, Judah did not have an attack by the Assyrians. The Assyrians went down and attacked the Philistines. They attacked Ashdod in 711 B.C. They did not attack Jerusalem during this time. Hezekiah concentrated on building his defense program. He concentrated on building his armies. During this time, he also constructed what we know of today as Hezekiah's Tunnel. Years ago, back in 1985, when we went to Israel, we went through Hezekiah's Tunnel. 1,777 feet of solid rock. They started boring from each end and met in the middle. Now, you can tell where they met in the middle. There's a little jog about this much in the middle, and that's about it. That's not too bad. You know, we think of these people as being ignorant people. They had some real engineers, and they had some real ingenuity in their building processes. You look at those huge, huge stones that they had. How did they put those big stones in place without a crane? You ever stop and think about it? You know, they were very technologically advanced. No gasoline engines, but they were technologically advanced, and they knew and understood how to be able to do things. Hezekiah's Tunnel connects the spring of Gihon, G-I-H-O-N, with the pool of Siloam. Now, the pool of Siloam was also constructed at the very same time. Hezekiah then went ahead and he extended the walls of Jerusalem so that the wall of Jerusalem would also enclose the pool of Siloam. And the intent was he wanted to make sure that if the city was ever besieged, under siege, they would have water in the city. They would not have to go outside the city to be able to get their water. Hezekiah not only prepared, but he also depended upon God for Judah's defense when the city was under siege. In 2 Chronicles 32, verse 8, we read, "With him," and this is his prayer, "with him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. If Judah would have had a king like that all the way through, you would have found things much, much different. And yet they didn't. Sennacherib ascended to the Assyrian throne in 705. There was rebellion that broke out in the Assyrian Empire at the time. As a result, Sennacherib marched his armies into Palestine. He conquered city after city. Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, also came against Jerusalem. He boasted that he had conquered 46 walled cities, but Isaiah encouraged Hezekiah to trust God for deliverance. Well, while Sennacherib was besieging Jerusalem, there was a revolt that broke out in Babylon. He had to rush back. Now, his general had, of course, told Israel, "Don't be deceived. You know, you're going to think that you're going to get away with this. You're not." Or Judah, he said, "Your city is going to be destroyed just like all of the others." And once again, God intervened. Now, Hezekiah's successful resistance gave him recognition by all of the surrounding nations, and it resulted in Hezekiah receiving many different gifts. During this time, of course, Hezekiah also had very severe illness. The prophet Isaiah had gone to Hezekiah to tell him that his life was about at an end because of his illness. Hezekiah went and pleaded with God for God to give him more time, and God sent Isaiah back to him to tell him, you're going to have 15 more years. Now, it's interesting because we also find during the reign of Hezekiah that with the revival of true religion in Israel, we find that Hezekiah also wrote some of the Psalms. And we'll look at that when we get back to get to studying the Psalms. But after his recovery, he received the gifts, and of course, among those sending gifts was the king of Babylon. He had, of course, recovered from his severe illness. And when this envoy came from the king of Babylon, he showed this king his entire wealth. He showed him everything that he had. He showed him everything that was in the temple. And it was a foolish thing, because really what it did was it built him up instead of building up the fact that God had protected the people. Isaiah warned Hezekiah that everything that the Babylonians had seen would someday be carried off to Babylon. But he did give him a consolation as well. He told him that he would have peace during his reign. After Sennacherib destroyed Babylon in 689 BC, Sennacherib, of course, once again was the king of Assyria. He continued to look westward. He sent Hezekiah a letter with an ultimatum to surrender. Now, Hezekiah had already seen how God could deliver the people, and Hezekiah brought the letters to the temple. He spread them out on the ground before the Lord as he was praying for deliverance. Isaiah brought Hezekiah the good news that Sennacherib was not going to conquer Jerusalem. En route to Jerusalem the second time, the Assyrian armies were destroyed. Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, returned to Nineveh, where he was killed by his two sons in 681 B.C. When Hezekiah died in 686 B.C., he was buried in honor, for he led his people in the greatest revival in Judah's history, as well as given religious leadership to many members of the 10 tribes who had been left behind after the dispersion. We go on and we look at Josiah's era. Nearly 50 years had passed between the end of Hezekiah's reign and the beginning of Josiah's reign. Hezekiah's son, Manasseh, was made co-regent with him in 696 and reigned until 642 when his son Amon succeeded him. Manasseh brought the darkest time in Judah's history, the darkest time of idolatry in its history. He raised up altars to Baal. He built idols that were comparable to those that were built by Ahab and Jezebel. He promoted the worship of the Ammonite god Moloch. And along with promoting the worship of the Ammonite god Moloch, he brought about the sacrifice of children in the Hinnom Valley. Other things that were commonplace in his reign were astrology, divination, and the occult. Manasseh openly defied God by placing altars for the hosts of heaven in the courts of the temple. He placed the graven images of Asherah, the wife of Baal, in the temple. Tradition states that Manasseh was the one who was responsible for the death of Isaiah the prophet by sawing him in half with a wood saw. The Bible tells us in 2 Kings 21, verse 16, moreover, Manasseh shed innocent blood very much till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to another. Beside his sin wherewith he made Judah to sin in doing that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. During the reign of Manasseh, the Assyrian control extended all the way down to Thebes in Egypt. We don't know exactly when it happened, but the scriptures do tell us that because Manasseh and the people of Judah would not hearken to the Lord, Manasseh was carried away captive to Babylon. After he was carried away captive to Babylon, he humbled himself, and the Bible scripture says he sought the Lord his God. Second Chronicles 33, verses 12 and 13 says, "And when he was in affliction, he besought the Lord his God, and he humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers, and prayed unto him, and was entreated of him, and heard his supplication, and brought him again to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord, he was God." When Manasseh returned to Jerusalem, Manasseh took away the strange gods. He took the idols out of the house of the Lord. He cast them out of the city. Along with doing those things, he repaired the altar of the Lord. He made the peace, offered the peace and the thank offerings as well. And he commanded Judah to worship the Lord. I don't know how much time he had, but it's likely that he didn't have a lot of time to reverse the wickedness that he had brought about in the kingdom of Judah. His son Ammon followed him as the next king, and his son Ammon followed in the wicked footsteps of his father. He was not influenced to serve the Lord by Manasseh's return from captivity, by his decision to go ahead and cleanse the temple. Within 2 years of becoming king, Ammon was slain by the slaves in the palace. Once again, we find the nation of Judah in a terrible time of apostasy. Josiah, Ammon's son, reigned for 31 years and began to rule when he was 8 years old. It's hard to imagine a king reigning when he's 8 years old, isn't it? I don't know too many 8-year-olds who could do a real good job with that. And yet, the Bible tells us he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of David his father and declined neither to the right hand nor to the left. Josiah brought about the last great revival in Judah before its destruction. It was during Josiah's reign that Nineveh was destroyed by the kingdoms of Media and Babylon. Once again, Nineveh is the Assyrians, and they were destroyed at that point. At 16 years old, the Bible tells us that Josiah began to seek after the God of David. At the age of 20, he began to break down the high places, the altars, and the images that were in Judah. In 621 B.C., while the temple was being repaired, the book of the law was recovered. And Josiah, in finding out that God wanted the Passover, instructed that the Passover be kept once again. Also, when the book of the law was discovered, Huldah the prophetess was called in by the king. And Huldah warned Josiah of God's impending judgment and instructed him in keeping the law. Jeremiah also ministered during this time. Now, you know you're getting close to the end when you get to the prophet Jeremiah, because Jeremiah not only prophesied about the captivity, but he also was alive when the nation of Judah was destroyed. The first 20 chapters of the book of Jeremiah take place during the reign of Josiah. While Josiah was a godly king, Josiah marched his armies to Megiddo to confront the king of Egypt. And when he marched his armies there, came Necho to fight the king of Egypt. Necho, Josiah was fatally wounded. His army was routed. As their 39-year-old king was buried in the city of David, it is said in 2 Chronicles 35, verse 25, and Jeremiah lamented for Josiah. During the last 25 years of Judah, the changes took place very, very quickly, and it ended in the destruction of Jerusalem. Although Assyria had dominated the Middle East for more than a century, now the Babylonian kingdom emerged as the most dominant power. Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, was placed on the king, was placed on the throne, but ruled for only 3 months until the king of Egypt replaced him with Jehoiakim, his brother, another son of Josiah. Jehoahaz was taken as a captive to Egypt, where he died, fulfilling the prophecy of Jeremiah. Jehoiakim was ruled under the authority of Egypt until 605, once again, when Necho was defeated by the Babylonians. During that summer, as the Babylonian army moved south, many of the treasures of Jerusalem, as well as prisoners, including Daniel, were taken to Babylon. By 598 B.C., Jehoiakim's rebelled sufficiently against Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar brought his armies to Jerusalem. Before they arrived, the king had lost his life to the marauding bands of the Chaldeans, Syrians, Ammonites, and Moabites. 2 Kings chapter 24 says, "Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did, and for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon." This sends a very serious warning to the United States of America, because the United States of America also is filling its streets with the shedding of innocent blood. Jehoiachin, Jehoiakim's son, reigned in his stead. He reigned for 3 months before surrendering to Nebuchadnezzar. At this time, of course, the Babylonians took the temple treasure. They took the temple treasures, the royal treasuries, and the king, the queen mother, the palace officials, and many of the community leaders were carried away captive to Babylon. Among those taken captive to Babylon during this time was the prophet Ezekiel. Jehoiachin's son, Zedekiah, reigned from 597 to 586 B.C., and he was made a puppet king and left to rule the nation of Judah. These guys just wanted somebody who would do what they wanted them to do. Zedekiah was under constant pressure to join and make an allegiance with the Egyptians and to rebel against Babylon. In its 11th year, Zedekiah yielded to their pressure only to face a siege against Jerusalem by the Babylonian armies, which lasted for 2 years. When Jerusalem was conquered, the walls were torn down, the temple was destroyed, the city was left in ashes, its citizens were dispersed. Zedekiah escaped. He escaped out of a secret tunnel, but he was captured at Jericho. He was taken to Riblah. After seeing his sons executed, Zedekiah had his eyes put out and was carried away captive to Babylon. Throughout this time, Jeremiah served as a faithful prophet of Jehovah. King Jehoiakim had burned his scroll, and when he had prophesied about the destruction of Jerusalem, the people would have killed him, except for the defense of Ahikam, who was a prominent political figure. Jeremiah constantly reminded Zedekiah to be subject to the king of Babylon, but was ignored. When Judah was carried off into captivity, Jeremiah remained there with the lower class people. He frequently faced persecution as he warned God's people of God's coming judgment and as he withstood the false prophets. Even after being imprisoned, thrown into a dungeon, and abandoned by his friends, Jeremiah lived to see the destruction of Jerusalem. The book of Lamentations probably expresses Jeremiah's thoughts as he saw the Davidic kingdom disintegrate and the Temple of Solomon destroyed after almost 4 centuries. One of his prophecies that we also are familiar with is that there was going to be a 70-year period of captivity. Sometimes you look at these things, you say, now why do we need to learn about all of these different people and all of these different things? Well, I think it's important for us because the Bible says these things are written for our admonition and learning upon whom the ends of the world are come. And we learn from these people. I'm assuming that you all have numbers 121 through 124 filled out by this time. And you figured out who these people were? Did you? Okay. As we look at the different rulers of the kingdom here, we find that the first one there, number 121, is Jehoshaphat, who ruled from 873 to 848. Joash ruled from 835 to 796. Hezekiah reigned from 715 to 686. And Josiah reigned from 640 to 609. Well, thank you, and we'll see you for our next lecture. And the next lecture will be looking at the return from the captivity.